This is the award-winning Speak Your Peace with Darren Dudrick, sponsored by O'Donnell Wealth Management on KODI and KZMQAM.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Darren Dudrick. If you have a comment or question, you may call us at 587-1400 or 1-866-833-4400. Speak Your Peace is sponsored by O'Donnell Wealth Management. When Steve O'Donnell speaks, people listen. And also brought to you in part by First Bank of Wyoming, your home lending partner in town. Mountain High Health Foods, for health foods, vitamins, herbs, books, anything for healthy living. Stop by Mountain High Health Foods, top of the hill in Cody and Wyoming Home and Ranch. They have a great selection of dog food, home decor, and the best lawn and garden section in town. Stop into Wyoming Home and Ranch on Bighorn Avenue in Cody for tools, products, and expert advice for all your projects. Once again, the phone number is 587-1400 or 1-866-833-4400. When calling us callers, please tell us your first and last name. We limit callers to one call per show. Today's guests on Speaker Peace, we welcome them back to Speaker Peace, State Senator Hank Coe and State Representatives David Northrup and Scott Court. Good morning, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
Morning,
good
Darren.
Good morning.
Well, welcome back to this part of the state.
Well, it's good to be back.
You guys have been down south for a while. It seems like you're pretty busy. I don't know for sure, but that's what the reports were. Pretty busy, right?
It was a busy session, is right.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask Senator Coe, in your time in the legislature, how would you rate this session as far as difficulty and everything altogether, would you say?
Probably the most difficult.
Really?
Yeah. My good friends in the House, we didn't always get along on everything. That's kind of an understatement.
Good friends in the House, huh? All right.
But it's very, very difficult when you're down there making hard decisions where you have to make reductions and cuts, and we just don't have the money. And that's what was most difficult about it, was that balancing act that we try to do to make good decisions or the best decisions we can based on what we know. And it was painful. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we did that was not fun.
Overall, do you feel like you did what you had to do, or are you comfortable leaving the session that you felt that you did what you could, you think, at both the Senate and the House for that overall?
Overall, we made, just for example, $279.4 million in additional cuts to state agencies and state government, which is pretty significant.
Oh, yeah.
If there's one thing that I don't think we've really addressed totally, and I'm not sure just how we're going to do that, is K-12 education. And, you know, Dave and I have worked very close on K-12, as you well know, and we chair joint education. But I did not feel that we made the reductions that we needed to make. We made reductions of $34.5 million, and then with what we did last year with the penny plan, 1.4% comes out to about $56 million. And this is out of a $1.5 billion budget. So that's going to be the thing that will be most difficult, because like I've said before, we can't tax our way out of this deal and we can't cut our way out of it. And so it'll be some difficult, heavy lifting in the interim.
David, your thoughts on the session down there? I'm assuming you probably feel the same way Senator feels, just how difficult it was, right?
Likewise, it was a tough session. You know, the House is charged with raising revenue, so anytime there's a revenue raising measure that comes through, it starts in the House. And when we put the House Bill 236 together, which was the education one, we had some diversions in there. We had some spending out of the LSRA, which is the legislative special rainy day fund, we want to call it whatever you want to call it, our piggy bank that we have, and we diverted money out of there. We had guaranteed the amount of money that we would be making on our investments with a 5% instead of a 2.5%, and that would be enough more money. And we had a whole bunch of just ways. We took five separate ways to attack onto that education portion of it. And as it turned out, when it came out of the Senate, all we had were cuts in it. And it was pretty tough to, you know, it just starts out the session with a real taste in your mouth when you hear all the time they just want to cut everything away and move forward. And so,
are you happy how things went overall, you think? Are you ever happy?
It was happy pretty much overall, but it was definitely a tougher session. I had a long-time legislator tell me before, he said, that's the worst session you can have when you have to make cuts.
kind of echoing what Senator said. Now, exactly right. Now, Scott, this is your first. It's talking about getting thrown to the wolves. You enter the, you go down to Cheyenne in this kind of climate. How do you feel it went for you? Your first, I guess, your first year in the legislature.
Well, I was going to say one of your guests last week. I think Wednesday was James Klessens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, he made the comments that the legislature is nonstop. Irons in the fire. That's pretty much it. It's the minute you walk in and do you leave at night, busy, busy, busy. A lot of work to do.
Did it live up to your expectations of what you thought?
Yes, it did.
Did it, and more so probably.
In a positive way, it was great. I loved it.
Did you feel comfortable with how things went? Did you feel like the state did their job?
I felt comfortable. We have good people down there. Great. Two of them sitting next to me, great legislators. They did a great job.
You know, James Klessens, you mentioned him last week on Speaker Piece. He kind of mentioned, you kind of wonder what it would be if the legislature ever thought about maybe kind of separating the whole education debate from everything else that happened, because it was such a big thing. Would that have been ever possible to do that? Could you have done that? Maybe put that to maybe a couple of weeks worth of debate and then get back to the other stuff? Is that something that could be done?
That was kicked around. We talked about having a special session just for education.
Yep.
And if we have a special session, when would we have it? Would we have it during the summertime, or do we have it during the right before the next budget session? Maybe take a week right before the budget session and come back and just do education, because it's such a big topic. And it's so, I guess people don't understand the whole breadth of it. I mean,
it's very complicated,
yes,
too.
Yes, very complicated.
It is.
85% of everything you do is people and benefits. And so salaries and benefits is 85% of all of education, roughly speaking. And so you just have a lot on your mind when you're making cuts, because you know that somebody's losing a job every time you do that.
Specifically about education, what I think the cut to education, what is it, $34 million starting July 1st? Is that what the number is at now?
Correct.
And, Senator, what do you think about that? Is that something that you thought was going to maybe be even more significant and more higher that going into the session? You thought it was going to be bigger than that?
I think it was a balancing act at the end. I think the Senate wanted to do more reductions. For instance, we had a part of one bill we had was to address, insurance, as the districts are funded with insurance. We fund districts with a block grant that includes insurance, health insurance. A lot of the people in the district don't use that insurance because they have a spouse that has a better program,
sure,
or something like that. And so we actually have it was about $26 million worth of health insurance premiums out there that are not being utilized by people in the districts, and we wanted to take that away if they weren't using it, to take it back. That's just an example. But at the end of the day, we settled on $34.5 million, and like I said, with what we did last year, it comes out to $56 million if you take the penny plan from last year.
Right.
But it was tough. I mean, it was, and you know, we have K-12s funded for the biennium. We funded it last year for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The downside to that is that in doing that last year, and it's funded till July 1st, 2018, we took our Common School Land Income Fund reserve account, which is our rainy day fund for K-12, and spent that entire amount, $563 million. So we don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
So very, very difficult stuff. It was not easy. The key to what we're going to do, though, rather than a special session, is that the House and the Senate both agreed very, very ardently that we need to recalibrate. So we're going to go into what we call recalibration immediately, and go back in and look at the funding model. You know, bring our consultants in. You know, hire consultants and look at it. Find out what's evidence-based and cost-based. Do another market analysis of salaries, which, as David alluded to, about 82% of K-12 funding is salaries and benefits. And then look at the regional cost adjustment, which are the two big things. So.
So you guys just thought the session's done, it'd be kind of like a little break. Most people don't. You guys never get a break.
No.
The only break you get is coming on Speaker Piece to tell us more about what you're doing. So what's your thoughts about the $34 million cuts, David, in education?
Well, and like Hank said, with the penny plan that we had in the budget bill from 16, that 1% plus the 1.4% that's moving forward amounted to a pretty good cut, but it's not going to be enough. And we've Hank and I have talked about it and looked at it, and there's an easy low-hanging fruit that really will affect teachers, and that, of course, is classroom size. We're at 16 to 1, and we'd like to bump that up to 18 at least to 1 in case 5, and then 24 or 25 in from 6 through 12, just to get more kids in the classroom. But we know when you do that, then you're talking about teachers, and those are people that they're people, and you hate to cut people, but that's what we're down to. We're down to the stage of we've done all the things that we can do that are not going to hurt people, and now we're looking at just cutting into more.
No, it's interesting when people read that the House and the Senate agreed to do this cut to education. They feel, okay, well, everything's solved now. So this session's over with. They came to an agreement, but the work has just begun with education, I think.
Yes, that hole out there is a $360 million hole this next biennium coming up, and we have to fill it up. I mean, we can cut some of it, but we have to put some fill into it, too. We can spend some money out of the LISRA and take some of that savings account and put into that. But we also have to make a cut, because if we don't make a cut somewhere, we can't fill that entirely up.
Do either of you anticipate anything major happening? I mean, maybe closing school districts, anything like that, people should be, hey, this could happen? Is that something that is down the road a potential possibility? I mean, I know that's desperate, but I mean, what do you think?
You know, we looked at, in the white paper that we created out there prior to the session, we looked at consolidation. And I say consolidation of the administrative functions.
Administrative, okay.
You know, not talking about busing kids from Matisse to Cody or whatever. But and overall, the projections were that it could maybe potentially save about $7 million.
Yeah, not much.
Which is, believe it or not, in the realm of school finance, that's pocket change, to be honest with you.
Right.
And the political fallout of it is awful. This is a rural state that loves their little schools. The town of Matisse that I love dearly, that town is focused on schools over there.
And they do a great job.
And they do a wonderful job. And the word consolidation is not in my vocabulary.
Just something that, well, like you said, if you did do it, it's not going to really amount to much anyway. So it's not worth probably in the long run.
No, I don't think it is.
Scott, any thoughts on education and sitting on your first session? Anything that you gathered from that whole discussion?
I supported what these guys did. They worked hard at it, and I agree with everything they've just said. It's a tough situation, but they're working on it, and they're gonna get it done.
What do you think, though, in your opinion, from looking at what you saw, some of the biggest concerns about education moving forward in the state of Wyoming? Is there anything that really sticks out to you?
No, just basically what they said. There's a big hole still to fill.
Right.
So a lot of work has to be done, talking to the public, the teachers, before the next session, budget session, and a big hole to fill come the next budget session.
How much will you two specifically involve the local school districts in some of the discussions? Obviously, there's probably going to be town halls and those sort of things moving forward, right?
All of our meetings are public.
Public,
and
sure.
We get a great turnout at our meetings from districts. And I will say that Ray Schulte, Kevin Mitchell, Jay Curtis, our three superintendents up here attend most of them.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's great input. And then we have great school board participation. Members of the school board participate in our meetings, and I foresee that still happening. I think we're going to have a great turnout, because this is really critical stuff that we'll be talking about in the interim, and we start these meetings in June. Maybe have one before then, but right now we don't start any joint. Recalibration hasn't even been scheduled yet, and that's probably going to take 3 2-day meetings at least out there. On top of the rest of our schedule. Yep.
Let's go to the phone line. Caller, please state your first and last name.
Hi, this is Keith Nollum.
Hi, Keith.
Hello, Keith.
Hi, Keith.
Hi, guys. On the tax increases and stuff, they tried to do the tax on wind energy generation. That was shot down. What about an increase in the state sales tax? What's that deal? And increasing the sin taxes, like cigarettes and beer and alcohol, that type of taxes?
Well, the wind tax got shot down, and actually that the wind farm they're going to build, the Chokecherry Project south of Rawlins, will be the largest wind farm in the country, over 1,000 generators. And Anschutz out of Denver really said, hey, if you're going to tax this stuff, I don't think we're going to do the project, you know.
Well, that's what they said. But I mean, you know, because we, you know, for historically, I don't know if we taxed enough on the energy industry, you know, the coal and the oil and gas, and what about raising any of those severances taxes or anything? What's, you know, I mean, just the, you know, the offset and I think if you would have, I mean, my opinion, if you had taxed wind, I think they would have paid it. They just said, yeah, geez, we don't have to pay if we whine.
Well, the mineral industry, you know, that's the goose that did lay the golden egg,
right,
for Wyoming. And, you know, to go out and increase taxes on the mineral industry, I don't have a stomach for that right now.
What about an income tax on the mineral industry? Because, you know, they extract it and they, you know, they're kind of like robber barons. They come in and they've done well that way, but maybe not on the volume. What about an income tax for the state?
Income tax is not in my vocabulary either, just like consolidation.
Nice try.
Well, I know you don't like that, but you know, that's one of the options if you're talking about increasing fees or taxes. I mean, that they didn't have any problem, you know, increasing the fee for the, you know, vehicle registration. Well, you know, from 15 to 30, that's a big chunk. Even though, you know, does $15 doesn't sound much to the individual, but that's a heck of a, you know, doubling that.
Last time they changed that was 1974.
Yep. Yeah, I know, but I mean, you know, they've never had an income tax either. When was the last time that happened? You know, if you're talking about last times. And then, of course, then my pet peeve is you know, the deal when they deal with the school in Mammoth and stuff. I mean, the Xanterra up there, they, you know, they're taking in $100 million. That's also Anschutz. Isn't that amazing? Anyway.
It is. That's fact.
You know, that, and yeah, good. I'm glad you know that. But anyway, so they don't pay any property taxes, but then their competition, like in Cody, any motel in Cody, or any, like your brother's place on the national forest, he has to pay property tax. But inside the park, they don't, on the commercial facilities and the housing units. The person that works at Walmart, he's got to pay his landlord, you know, an extra rent so that the landlord can pay his property tax, but none of the employees in the park that work for either the concessionaire or the park service has to be property taxed on their housing. That's, you know, that's just, that was a pet peeve. All these other things are, you know, raising the, you know, the sin taxes. What's that? And the wind energy tax, you know. And now is it the volumes down so much in the coal sales or the price of coal or the price of natural gas that's really hurting, you know, because it, what, it used to be like $7 or $8 per MCF, and now it's like $3 or something?
Well, I can answer that. Basically, okay, there was a full-scale assault on the coal industry by the Obama administration with the Clean Air Act and all the other stuff, and we produced about 46% of the domestic coal was produced in Wyoming, far and away the largest of any state, 450 million tons a year. We're down to about 315 million tons now. That's driven also by commodity prices. The prices is low. And then natural gas, there's a huge surplus of natural gas out there that is competitive with coal.
Because of the fracking in the Marcellus and Utica shale.
Yep, exactly.
Back east has made the difference. And then coal also, there's the worldwide production of coal is up, so our exports of coal is not what they anticipated to be. Is that correct, too?
Yes, to a certain extent. We're exporting more coal out of the Gulf right now than we have in a long time.
Oh, Wyoming is.
Yeah.
So we are exporting some.
Some, yeah.
Is that helping the revenue then?
Is it such
a loss that they, you know, from coal generating to power plants in the United States where they've converted to natural gas a certain faster than they can export?
That's part of the problem. And then, you know, the huge surplus in gas, like I just said. But coal is, the commodity prices for coal is still low.
How about the commodity price for oil? Is that in volume?
Well, you're looking at $48, $50 crude oil.
And then the volume's gone down?
Actually, in Wyoming, we've gone up a little bit.
So we should be doing sort of okay?
We're doing better.
Okay, thanks.
But it's not $100 oil.
It's not $100 oil. It's 50.
Well, yeah, but $100 oil hurt everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, guys.
And thanks for the call.
Thanks, Keith.
We're going to take a quick break on Speaker Peace. If you'd like to join the conversation today with State Senator Hank Coe and State Representatives David Northrup and Scott Cord, give us a call, 587-1400. We'll be back with more Speaker Peace brought to you by O'Donnell Wealth Management right after these messages.
The views and or opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily the views and or opinions of this station or its advertisers.
Are your investments getting the attention they deserve? Are you selling a business or planning on retiring in the near future? You owe it to yourself and your future to visit O'Donnell Wealth Management. When Steve O'Donnell speaks, people listen. O'Donnell Wealth Management, 1306 Sheridan Avenue, Cody, 586-4279. Investment advisory services offered through Saxony Capital Management, LLC. Securities offered through Saxony Securities, Inc., member FINRA/SIPC.
Some days, life has a way of getting the best of us. Stress can take a toll on you physically and emotionally, but there are simple steps that you can take to combat stress. This is Marty from Mountain High Health Foods, and our customers are truly enjoying the stress-busting benefits of Mega B Stress. So, don't stress, stay healthy. Stop in today at Mountain High Health Foods, top of the hill in Cody.
Fly through Yellowstone Regional Airport in Cody and join a record number of passengers served by YRA in 2016. This select group, dedicated to no-hassle travel, decided to spend more time flying than driving. And with year-round service to Salt Lake and seasonal service to Denver beginning May 5th, YRA continues to enhance services for local passengers. Isn't it time you decided to fly right through Yellowstone Regional Airport?
Did the stress of holiday spending get you down? Did wish lists cost you a mint? We can help. This is Lisa Reese from the Bank of Grable. Take a bite out of holiday stress with a Christmas Club account. Our interest-earning Christmas Club savings account will ease the burden of holiday expenses. Save a little or save a lot and reap the rewards of a club payout in November. Stop by and let's talk. Bank of Grable, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Like anything mechanical, your garage door needs occasional maintenance. This is Amy Danzi with Cody Overhead Door. This is a great time to call and get our signature 20-point garage door service for only $59.95. Don't let a small problem turn into a big one. Call for details today. Cody Overhead Door, taking care of life's ups and downs since 1982 and proudly serving the entire Bighorn Basin. Call 527-6557 or visit CodyOverheadDoor.com.
Join us weekdays for 2 hours of local talk, news, weather, and sports here on 1400 AM, 96.7 FM, KODI. From 4 to 5 p.m., it's a rebroadcast of Wyoming's award-winning news talk program, Speak Your Peace, followed at 5 with an hour of in-depth news, weather, and sports with award-winning sports director Tim Anderson. It's the information you need to know. Weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m., only on 1400 AM, 96.7 FM, KODI, your news authority.
When I listen to Audible, I'm not on mile two of my early morning run. I'm out searching for clues in the abandoned toy factory near the cemetery. As I make my way down to the basement, I can't help but feel like I'm being followed. Did that doll just move?
Who's there? They're getting closer!
I should really get a treadmill.
Go to audible.com/act now and your first download is free. Audible, stories that surround you.
Blue the dog here for propane. Making the rounds with my owner, the propane man, has allowed me to see a lot. I may just be a simple dog. I didn't attend the elite boarding kennels, and you'll never see me on Barking with the Stars. But I do know that propane is the smart fuel that lets millions of Americans live where they want and how they want. It's clean, reliable, and powers modern appliances from tankless water heaters to high-efficiency furnaces. Learn more at ProudlyPropane.com.
We are back on Speaker Peace, brought to you by O'Donnell Wealth Management. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Darren Dutrick, visiting with State Senator Hank Coe and State Representatives David Northrup and Scott Cord. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 587-1400. Last segment, Senator, you alluded to the Obama administration's assault on the coal industry, which probably an understatement at the very least. But did you guys get the sense down there that with the new Trump administration that things are going to start churning in the right direction regarding that? Was there a feeling that that's going to happen, you think?
Absolutely. I don't see any question about it. And we've seen a revitalization of coal a little bit. up about 25% from a year ago. And, I think there's optimism out there that I don't think it'll come back to the levels where it was, but I think there's a chance for it to recover.
Did you feel the same way?
Exactly. Everybody was really hyped up on the Trump administration, hoping that there'd be some change coming. And that's one of the first changes we're seeing, of course, is that there's a different attitude towards coal.
Scott, did you get the same kind of pressure?
Totally. Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was a good feeling. You know, another thing I wanted to ask you guys about, we want to talk a little bit about the gun bills, because I know that was a highly publicized stuff that went on in the state legislature. But this Amazon tax bill that went passed and signed by the governor, your thoughts on that, Senator, the Amazon tax bill, is that something that you felt in favor, strongly in favor of?
Well, yeah, I was in favor of it. I think a company like Amazon that, you know, gathers in incredible amounts of money away from Wyoming needs to pay tax on that. And, of course, that was the whole focus. My understanding is that Amazon came in and voluntarily said.
That's correct.
Prior to the session.
Oh, they did.
Voluntarily came in and said, we're going to start collecting tax on sales to Wyoming people.
Do you feel the same way?
And what it did is, if you had a brick-and-mortar facility, let's take Barnes & Nobles, for example. Barnes & Nobles has a brick-and-mortar facility here in Wyoming, so they automatically collect that tax regardless because they do have that facility here. So if I order a book off the Internet, then I pay a tax on it. But if you order something off of some other sites out there, you may or may not pay a tax on it. It just depends upon whether or not they have a physical presence in Wyoming. And that's what that was trying to capture, was that if you don't have a physical presence, you still ought to be able to pay that tax on it. So,
and are you in support of that, Scott?
Yeah, agree with Hank and David. Yes, I do.
You know, we've gotten some calls on Speak Your Piece from some people questioning the constitutionality of an Amazon Internet tax bill. Was that ever brought up at the legislature? There may be some concern it may be unconstitutional to be able to, or is that something you think that's
never heard it talked about down there?
Okay. All right. So again, the state's looking for ways to generate revenue, and they got to do something. And this is one of the things I think that, and I think a lot of people, for the most part, from who I talk to, were in support of something like this because it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And the people that I talked to said they were already paying that sales tax.
Already.
They said, well, I'm sure I'm paying it. Let me look. And they'd pull up an invoice and go, oh, look at that. I'm not paying tax on that.
Now, there are three gun bills that were discussed at the state legislature that you guys discussed. House Bill 194, which involved school boards allow K through 12 staff to carry firearms. House Bill 137, about firearms in state local government meetings, and then 136, guns on college campuses. We'll start with the one that got killed in the Senate. Is that where it got killed? 136. Right. Now, David, you tried to have it before that got killed. You tried to have an amendment to that that got struck down as well, right?
Correct. I tried to put an amendment in the House that said that it would be a local control issue. In other words, we want the people who are elected to be the ones making that decision on what sporting events, what buildings, and who gets to do that, just like it is in 194.
But my understanding is that all the college presidents were highly against that. Is that why it
gets... Hugely against it. I mean, my emails and everything I got from the education community were running about 6 or 7 to 1.
Really?
Against the bill.
Yeah.
Literally. What were they saying? What specifics were they telling you in some of those emails? Is it just that they didn't want people to freely be able to roam around campus carrying a firearm? Or?
Well, a good example would be when Wyoming's playing Colorado State in basketball. And, you know, you're going to try to get referees to come referee the game, but everybody in the stands can be armed.
Yeah.
No. And it can be contentious. And you know, sporting events was the big thing I heard from, even in high school athletics. You know, tempers flare. They just didn't want it.
Do you think something like that, your amendment, for example, David, giving local control to the Board of Trustees, do you think that something like that will ever see the light of day? I mean, with guns on college campuses, or do you feel like the presidents are so strongly against it, it's not going to happen?
I don't think they're against the local control portion. They were just against the guns on campus. And with some kind of control in it, somewhere you'd be able to say that these people that are certified can do that would be a lot better way. And then say, well, we can't have them in sporting events. You know, since the University of Wyoming is allowing alcohol in on basketball games and football games, like the good senator said, it could be very contentious in a hurry and could turn into an explosive situation, literally.
2 years ago, we had a bill you know, comparable bill.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
A wide open repeal of gun-free zones and everything. And it passed the House. And so it got assigned to the Senate Education Committee by then-President Nicholas. And we put a huge amendment on it for local control. Exactly that. And we started getting emails. Vote for the House version, not the Senate version. Well, the problem is that the House version just wasn't going to survive. It was DOA in the Senate unless we put an amendment on it that talked about local control. So that's what we did. And then the emails kept on coming. Now I'll vote against it. So I ended up on the floor voting against it after I brought the amendment that really put local control back into it.
Let's go to the phone line. Caller, please state your first and last name.
Hi, this is Cindy Katz.
Hi.
And hi. I was wondering if one of the legislators could speak to rare earth products here in Wyoming. I know there's only a couple places in the world that have as much rare earth as Wyoming. And is that part of the discussion about, you know, we've got coal and we've got natural gas and we've got oil? I mean, what about rare earth? Does anybody, I'm going to leave, but I'll take it over the offline. But can anybody speak to that issue?
Thanks, Cindy.
Thanks for the call, Cindy.
So, uh-huh. Yeah, we have a couple rare earth deposits that are in Wyoming right now. And one
northeast,
of them,
northeast part of the state.
That's right.
Really
one's
big.
In the northeast. And the one, they were trying to get a mining permit to put that together. And the administrative forces were so great that they could not get the permit. It took 7 years, and they finally, the market tanked, and they just could not make a profit at mining lithium over there, and so that project went down.
It was a government permitting process.
That's
too,
exactly
if I remember,
right.
that it went down with.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that, Scott? Anything? Scott's
totally
taking this all
with my counterparts.
He's
here.
He's a smart first-year legislator. He said, yeah, I agree with him.
These guys have the experience. They're great. They do
you're
a great
you're
job.
Smart guy, Scott. I don't blame you for that. Now, House Bill 137, which I understand that was vetoed, right? You guys were telling me during
last
the
last week.
Okay. And that was the one that would allow firearms in state local government meetings. And what was the reason for the veto, that, as far as you guys understand it?
And first of all, I voted for it, but the veto message, if I understood it, by the governor, it treated county commission meetings, city council meetings, differently than legislative meetings. I can't remember the exact language in the bill. Maybe David can.
I don't remember it either.
But, you know, that was his rationale for vetoing it.
Now, did all three of you support that?
We all voted for it.
All voted for it, yeah.
And you were telling me you were a little surprised that the governor might have vetoed that, right? Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was surprised, although I will say 194 he did sign. You know, House Bill 194 is in law.
And that's one that allows local school boards to control whether they want a staff to carry firearms, which I think actually was, from what I've heard, for most people it was a pretty good solid bill. Are you guys hearing the same things?
We were actually asked to bring that bill. It was
by the three districts.
By the three Park County districts here.
So it was almost generated locally.
Yes, that's right. It had a lot of support locally by the school districts because of the situations that are taking place in the world. And then besides that, we have places like Meteetse and Ten Sleep where, you know, maybe that deputy's off and transporting somebody over to Cody and he doesn't have the ability to be in Meteetse. Right. So they could be a half hour away before they can get to an incident if it should happen. So
well, and you got Wapiti and you got Valley School.
That's right.
Clark out here, Clark as well.
That's right. You guys were talking about this a year ago on this program about putting together some kind of bill like this. Now, some of the details of the bill, does it require school districts to have their staff be certified or get some kind of training? Is that part of the bill's requirement?
Yes,
okay. So because I know there was people wondering about that and maybe might have missed that, but you certainly have to have training in order to do that.
Yep, and the districts have to put that together. That training portion is all theirs.
Now, I know some, I don't know if it was the Wyoming gun owners, I don't know who it was, but there are some groups that were opposed to this because they were wanting the gun-free zone completely gone from schools. Is that?
That's correct.
What were you hearing from them? Was that they just wanted the legislature to get rid of the gun-free zones?
Period.
Yep.
And that's
their way of the highway, though.
And that's been tried before, though, right? Mm-hmm. In schools? How many times before you think something like that's been brought up?
Well, the bill I just talked about
that was
2 years ago, that was it. Total repeal of gun-free zones.
And I just had said to him, you know, let's take baby steps in this. Let's see if this will work and work our way through this process and not just take it all in big one big bite to start with.
Scott, do you think there'd be a lot of school districts that utilize this? Do you think that's going to be a possibility with 194? Because I know one of the states, I had somebody on here, Bill Tellin. You guys probably, he was helped you guys with this.
By the way, he came down and gave great testimony on 194. He came all the way to Cheyenne, and he's the one that instigated us to have the training put in.
Yeah, he, so
and
he
did
was,
a good job on the bill.
And he was telling me the one state, well, it might have been South Dakota, that waited almost a year before any school district decided to allow staff to carry. Do you think most school districts will?
My main thing is it's interesting things are moving in this direction quite strongly.
And then, you know, what I've heard, and you guys know this more than I would, but it seems like they said that gun bills arrive in the House and they always die in the Senate for some reason. Is that
been
kind of like
in the past?
That's what it's been in the past.
Yep.
So were you surprised, Senator, that the Senate actually said, "Hey, let's do this"?
Well, let me put it this way: my friends down the hall, and I'm sitting with them right here. I don't think they necessarily had the appetite, but it was easy to put a check mark next to their Second Amendment vote, and then let the Senate try to fix it. Honestly, I think that's what happened. I'm not saying that about David or anybody, but I know some House members that told me that.
Really?
Yeah.
It was just kind of a PR stuff.
2 years ago was when that really took place, and they said, "Yep, we just wanted to put a check mark next to our Second Amendment vote and send it down the hall and hope you guys would fix it."
Are there a lot of legislators that want the gun-free zones in schools taken away? Is there a lot? I mean, I don't know how you categorize a lot, but I mean,
there was a majority because we passed House Bill 194.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And that, I guess, that point you could say they're okay.
Yep.
So, and
same in the Senate.
Same in the Senate. Now, what about gun bills in the future? Do you feel like that's anything down the road regarding?
Every session, we'll see another gun bill.
Think there is, huh?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How about marijuana bills? Any of those that came up?
Every session we'll see another marijuana bill.
Did all of them get killed this session? I couldn't tell if there was any that were approved.
There was one on penalties.
Penalties for edibles.
Yep.
Right.
So
this,
that one.
This is one area where the House does pretty good work.
You know, he had to compliment.
Because those bills bills have always started in the House.
Interesting. You realize he's outnumbered here, though.
Yeah, I do.
He's sitting right in the middle.
I'm in the middle here.
This is interesting.
So, we just tried to get some kind of legislation, some kind of law on the edibles, because as it is now, there was not. It was a loophole in the law, and you could bring an edible over, and how do you tell? I mean, one gummy bear looks like the next gummy bear, so.
That's true.
And you can actually put, you can't believe what you can put in a gummy bear. It's incredible.
I
couldn't believe it.
Really? Something so small.
Unbelievable.
The strength of some of the stuff you can put in.
Really?
Unreal.
Like
unreal.
15 or 16, 17 servings in a gummy bear. How do you do that?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean,
wow.
And I know people that tell you that they'll eat a gummy bear and they don't get any effect out of it, so they eat another one, and then they're in the hospital.
Yeah.
It happens. Well, some of the stuff, I just want to ask you guys, just your thoughts on some of the things that didn't happen at the session that you thought maybe would have or you wish should have. I mean, I don't know. I'll start with Senator. Are there some things that weren't brought up that you think that maybe you wish they would have spent a little bit more time on in the session?
Not particularly. We were so focused when we went into the session, particularly with the white paper, knowing the problems that we had with K-12 funding. And we just haven't finished that debate, and we hadn't finished it before we started, and we didn't finish it during the session totally. Whether it's revenue-raising measures or whatever, it might, you know, reductions and cuts. But K-12 is, funded differently than the general. It's not funded out of the general fund. It's funded 65% by local ad valorem taxes. So the revenue stream to K-12 is different, but not anything in particular, because I was so focused on the education issues and we had so much heavy lifting to do that I can't think of anything.
There's one we missed, and that was school facilities. We never came up with a way to fund school facilities, and it's one of the things we'll have to look at in the next coming summer and also in the next session. With school facilities, we don't even have a way to do major maintenance put together yet. I mean, we were using coal taxes.
Coal lease bonus bids.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And so
that's gone.
That's gone. And now we don't have a way to do anything with it, so we have to start looking at that and figure out a way to at least have major maintenance in there and keep the facilities that we have.
You know, major maintenance, $65 million a year.
Not a
cheap shot.
Not
that's
a
right.
small number, that's for sure. Scott, anything that, I know it was your first session, but something...
You know, I'm anxious to go to the budget session next February and see what that's all about. I think the focus was on the education budget and the general budget. That was the crux of the whole atmosphere, basically. Yeah.
And that was expected. And right. Do either of you think too much time was spent on that?
On education?
Yeah.
I don't think we spent enough.
Time. And you can't.
And you know how hard it is to just talk about education, so we're having to bring a whole bunch of new people along. We have, what'd you have, 6, 7 in the Senate, and then we had 21.
Seven new people in the Senate.
In the House, and so we have to educate them and bring them up. You got to get them up to speed and get them to where they understand when you're talking about regional cost adjustments, RCAs, or all the other terms that we use, what they are. And so it's just, it takes time to do that and bring them along and get people coming and start thinking like that. And then they have to also get some feedback from their districts on education and get to where that everybody's talking the same language. And that's a process right there.
And recalibration will have an effect on that.
Okay.
That'll be an educational process, not only for the recalibration committee, but for other legislators,
right.
new legislators. And I think we got to remember that the overall cuts we made to education amount to about 3.6%. I mean, it's just not that big of animal yet.
We fund
schools better than anybody else.
Right?
Pardon?
I said the general budget was cut about 12%. Education mm-hmm. was 3.5%.
Right. Community colleges, Northwest College cut is down 15%. They did away with three programs and riffed 20 people.
How much time is spent on educating new legislators? Like we got one sitting in the studio here, but how much time do you guys spend doing that, and how much time needs to be spent doing that?
Well, I always go around the new people and I say, now, if there's one thing you need to understand here. If you don't know how to vote, vote like I do.
Very good advice. Scott's the city. Okay. Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of time just talking to him. I do on the side. I'll grab some people and say, do you know what this is? Do you know how this works? And just try to get whatever subject we're going to talk about that day, or we did talk about that day on a bill.
I was going to say, and you learn from the people that are sitting next to you. Yeah. David sat behind me. Jim Allen from Lander, very conservative representative, next to me. And you pick it up. As you do votes every day, you kind of pick up where everybody's coming from, what everybody thinks. And then everybody's there helping out and all that. So that works out good.
Now, why you sat behind him in case he did something he shouldn't, you can whack him over the head with a pencil?
He never whacked me.
He never did. Okay, well, we make sure to get that straight.
Pat Childers always said when he served with my good friend Peg Shreve that she sat behind him and he had bruises all over his back because she do that.
There you go. So you know what to expect maybe next time. Huh?
David was busy. I can tell you that. He was busy doing his education stuff most of the time.
That was up a lot. You when you're sitting there doing debate, you're up and you're talking on debate, and you have a lot to express and a lot of information to get out there. So you're just up moving around a lot.
What was the biggest thing you learned, Scott, would you say? I mean, there's probably so much you had to take in, but was there anything that was surprising that you said, wow, I didn't know that, or this is an eye-opening experience? The whole thing.
Well, no, basically all of it. It was a learning experience. I think I've learned part of it, and I got to go back a little more to learn more of it.
And it's just begun, right? You guys, it's
nonstop. It's irons in the fire all day long, morning till night.
Fast-moving process, and if you don't keep track of it, it'll run off and leave you.
Yep. Let's go to the phone line. Caller, please state your first and last name.
Judy Frisbee.
Hi, Judy.
Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. In the paper this morning, of course, this is Montana, but it was because Billings paper, it was talking about that Trump has cut money to the airports. Can you address how that's going to happen or how that's going to affect Cody? I presume that's not for this summer, but for next summer.
We aren't talking summer at all with that particular program. It's the Essential Air Service program that's funded under the U.S. Department of Transportation. And I want to emphasize, first of all, that Trump can't do that. It has to be legislated through the Senate and the House before he has a shot at it, but that would affect how we operate here in the winter months between October 1st and May 1st. We operate with SkyWest under EAS, Essential Air Service, and it's basically a subsidy for them to fly in the wintertime. This is as a result of the Deregulation Act 1978. The Essential Air Service program was created, and we're entitled under that program to two frequencies a day to a hub. And so this could have an effect on our winter service here, no question about it.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. I thought it was the summer, so it's the winter.
Yep, it's just winter.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Judy. You know, you might be the first person to ever say on the radio, Trump can't do that. You notice that? The power of a state senator. There you go.
I just, you know, he can't do that. Honestly, he can't.
And I think he's probably learning as he goes, I'm assuming.
It has to be legislated. Got to go through the House and the Senate.
We're going to take a quick break on Speaker Peace. If you'd like, join the conversation today with State Senator Hank Coe and State Representatives David Northrup and Scott Cord. Give us a call, 587-1400. We're back with more Speaker Peace brought to you by O'Donnell Wealth Management right after these messages.
A duty to serve. A focus on ethics, always putting the client's interests first. Unbiased advice, full disclosure, undivided loyalty, care, and the utmost good faith. A mission to protect, educate, and empower investors. This is the fiduciary standard. This is O'Donnell Wealth Management. When Steve O'Donnell speaks, people listen. Investment advisory services offered through Saxony Capital Management, LLC. Securities offered through Saxony Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC.
Hi, this is Chad Hopkin. I've recently joined the team at First Bank of Wyoming and Cody. I've served banking customers throughout the Bighorn Basin for over 5 years, and I'm ready to put my skills and experience to work for your business. Stop by First Bank of Wyoming at 1507 8th Street here in Cody, and let's talk about the loans, products, and services First Bank of Wyoming is able to offer that can help you and your business meet your financial needs and goals. First Bank of Wyoming, where you are first. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
First Bank of Wyoming, where you are.
When you bring your cattle or sheep to Worland Livestock Auction, you will be treated fairly. With our lower commission and shorter haul from your home to our ring, we will add more to your bottom line here, closer to home. Please call Jim at 431-9999 and give us a fair chance at marketing your livestock this coming fall and winter. With over 25,000 head of calves still being backgrounded right around Worland, local buyer demand is still high, and we would like to hear from you.
Talking to Steve out at Rimrock Cabinet Company, and Steve, you work in an idea business like a lot of businesses are, but where do the ideas come from? Is it homeowners coming in with dreams, or is it manufacturers that say, well, if we did it this way, or we've tried this out in a test market, or is it from you, the Rimrock Cabinet Specialist? Where do these ideas that people can take advantage of most often come from?
One of the biggest things is we have a team of people. You know, it's not one guy looking at it. It's not me just looking at your plan. We have, you know, four or five guys looking at a plan, and if we get a new concept or an idea like hidden pantries, for instance, was one that we actually kind of didn't design this last year. That wasn't a one-person effort. It went across four or five people. Also, the homeowners were involved in that particular project. So I see it more as a team effort all the way around. If a customer has an idea, we want to get it done for them, and we have the team to actually handle that.
Thanks, Steve. Need some ideas for your home? Call the team at Rimrock Cabinet, 656-8109.
Don't miss this amazing limited-time offer from Sprint. Switch and get 4 lines of unlimited data talk and text, plus HD video and 10 gigabytes of mobile hotspot, all for just $22.50 per month per line for 4 lines. Just $22.50 per line. That's 50% off Verizon Unlimited and AT&T Unlimited Plus rates. And don't forget, Sprint's network reliability is within 1% of Verizon and AT&T. So, why would you pay twice as much for your unlimited plan? Hurry in for the best unlimited plan ever. Visit Sprint.com/unlimited or call 1-800-SPRINT-1 today.
After 3/31/18, $60 for line 1, $40 line 2, and $30 lines 3 through 4 per month. Coverage and offer not everywhere. Excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, and premium content. Streams video at up to HD 1080p. Music at up to 1.5 megabits per second. Gaming at up to 8 megabits per second. Credit $30 activation fee. Prohibited network use. Stated deprioritization and restrictions apply.
We are back on Speaker Peace, brought to you by O'Donnell Wealth Management. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Darren Dudrick, visiting with State Senator Hank Coe and State Representatives David Northrup and Scott Cord. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 587-1400. We're talking about the recently ended state legislature session, which has ended, but you guys, you have lots of work to do. You got town halls, meetings, and everything else coming up. One thing that you guys brought up to me, and Scott, I think Scott brought this up, was there was a lot of concern expressed by constituents regarding Meals on Wheels program, right? Because people were concerned that was going to be cut. Is that right, Scott?
Well, I know I received probably 200 to 300 pieces of correspondence. I know David did. I think Hank did too. I know the Meals on Wheels were cut fairly substantially under Governor Meade's cuts a year ago, but in this legislature, the Appropriations Committee, we didn't cut any more than what had been cut a year ago from the governor.
So that was people that were wondering about that.
That's right.
So for what, a year and a half, there will be no more cuts. But now under the Trump budget, Meals on Wheels is getting a lot of publicity on TV. Because according to the Trump budget, several million people are going to lose their Meals on Wheels. Mm-hmm. So, but that's not our, that's not under our, what we voted for down at the legislature.
As far as phone calls and emails, what and letters, what is the, in Meals on Wheels being one of them, what are the more popular things that people have asked you about and were concerned with in this session?
Guns.
Guns. Guns. Really?
Well, and then we had the white paper, and so on the white paper alone, we had probably 1,000 emails and input on the hotline and just comments directly associated with the white paper that we did right before session. And then during session, I bet that there was another 1,000 that came in during session just on education, just those comments about this portion of it or that portion of it. And, you know, we looked at special ed, cutting special ed, and we looked at cutting transportation and some other things, or freezing them and not necessarily cutting them, but just putting a freeze on them. And those generated a lot of interest.
I was getting, I get, and these guys are the same way, but 200 to 300 emails a day.
Yep.
Was not unusual.
Man, and I'm assuming you look at most of them, not all of them, right? You glance them
over. I particularly pay attention when there are constituents back home.
Sure.
Particularly do that.
Yep.
A lot of them are canned. You know, they get a message out and they just inundate you with huge numbers of them.
Are most people constructive when they send you guys stuff?
Yes.
Are
I
they?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Really?
It's very constructive.
Okay. I had some nasty ones, but
he's used to that.
Generally speaking, very constructive.
In fact, polite. I want to say 90% of mine would start off by thank you for representing.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service. So, very constructive.
I guess when you guys go through a session like that, when you get emails like that, it's kind of makes you feel good that people appreciate the work you do and the service you do to this area, I'm assuming. It makes you.
That's right.
Yep. I think so.
Anything in the session that we didn't cover today that you that came up that you guys may want to bring up or that think people should know about or anything interesting that happened during that whole adventure up or down to Cheyenne?
I would just encourage people to pay attention to our legislative webpage if they have an interest and to track the meetings, because we've got 10 standing committees that meet jointly. House and Senate meet jointly with different study topics. And that all takes place in the interim, whether it's the Joint Transportation Committee that Scott's on, or Education, or Minerals Committee, or Revenue Committee. They all meet jointly and have defined, approved study topics. And if you have an interest, participate.
Right.
Let your thoughts be known.
Yep. What committees, Scott, did you serve on?
I'm on the Transportation Committee.
Okay.
I was on the House Transportation Committee. We will, over the course of the next year, we have three interim meetings where we meet jointly with the Senate Transportation Committee. Memorial Weekend, we meet in Douglas. October, we meet in Newcastle. November, we meet in Thermopolis. And these are like, what, two-day meetings, one-day meetings? So that'll be interesting. And the public can attend and
are welcome to attend.
Absolutely.
Do you guys know when your first education-oriented meeting is going to be in our area? Do we know when that's going to be?
Aren't sure we're going to do any in the up here.
Okay.
Actually, we were encouraged by management council to have our meetings in Casper.
Casper, okay.
Because we have consultants that fly in. It's easier for them to fly in for our meetings. And honestly, Casper is the cheapest place to have a meeting for us. It's right in the center.
There you go. All right.
Is Casper my favorite place? No way.
No way. Meteetse is, right?
Yeah, Meteetse is.
State Senator Hank Coe, State Representatives David Northrup and Scott Court. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
And that will do it for Speaker Peace, brought to you by O'Donnell Wealth Management. I'm Darren Dudrick. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.
This has been Speak Your Peace, sponsored by O'Donnell Wealth Management on 1400 AM, 96.7 FM KODI Cody, and 1140 AM KZMQ Grable.